an update on DPW work for since our last meeting, and I'd like to just also talk after his presentation about current sidewalk legislation that we have pending, plus to hear Rob's opinion on that, plus to get a general sense of the city's ADA work and compliance following the last year's settlement agreement with the Justice Department. So with that,
Subs revenue in January was $27,297, which actually is pretty good for a January, but not surprising when you consider it's mild. So usually there's 2 feet of snow where the private haulers are going to somebody's yard, and they don't move so quickly. So that looks good for the rest of the year. Let's start off with a decent first month. Two rain events, measurable overflows. So that's fine. We did submit our 2019 sludge report, and it's about 10 or 15 pages. I just have this one page just to give you an idea of sludge is what is the end process of the treatment. It's we take in all of the raw sewage, if you will. Then there's various biological processes that take place where the big bugs eat the old bugs and the new bugs, and everything gets broken down. The final product is sludge gets hauled off to a private landfill, which is in Ontario County, New York. The reason I show this is because even after we do all the breakdowns and we dewater, you're still talking about 1,400 ton of finished product, and that used to run about $95 a ton. It's now up around 120, and it's only expected to grow more as time can. You know, there's more regulatory constraints on landfills of all types, especially these types. There's pressures from the communities regarding odor and other constraints, so the price is going up about 20% over the last year and a half. So it does represent, as of 2019, it represented $170,000, which is just under 15% of the annual sewer budget. So as a single line item, it does have a significant impact. There are, you know, other ways people have kind of put to continue to dry drying beds, which involve, you know, construction of a facility where you take the sludge off of our process and then simply let it hang out and let it, you know, you return it, have to be obviously covered because of rain mixes with it, becomes later. Because you really the idea is to get the water out of it, because water weighs 8.34 pounds per gallon, and every gallon of water that still gets into it, you're paying the haul and treat. So we look into it. It's something that we've evaluated some other products in the past. A lot of times they just have these massive sticker prices, you know, millions of dollars, and you know the return on investment just doesn't work. So, but it's something that we do continue to research. Back in 2010, we completed a. You know, when I first started, there was a map room upstairs that had all these great maps, and there was, you know, examples of a map that would say the new sewer system, and it was dated 1911. So, you know, there really wasn't anything comprehensive that told us what was in the ground, what was working, and what was abandoned. So we went through we actually had GPS points taken for all of the manholes and all the catch basins throughout the city. And this was about a $50,000 project, like I said, almost 10 years ago. So we've had that data, we've used it for planning purposes, we've used it in our maps, the maps are available online, but one of the things that we didn't have was the actual assessment of the structures themselves, as well as one with the materials, whether a precast product, whether a brick or stone product, also the mains that go through them. We didn't really have any kind of a comprehensive inventory of what the mains are from manhole to manhole. And the reason that that's is significant is we know that the stone ones are the oldest in the system. They're probably 200 years old. Then there are brick ones that are well over 150 years old. You know, until you start getting into your tile products, which would, you know, be in the 100-year range and less. So the significance is, you know, Jamie Malcolm, who's the resident engineer for Region 4 for the EC, has been telling us that for the last couple of years that there's this potential EPA groundswell of money to do stormwater separation for large projects. This is literally, for us to do the separation, you know, you're talking easily $60, $70 million. I mean, it's just, you know, sewers are deep, which means the holes are deep. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them are rather large, which means the holes have got to be wide. There's lots of conflicts, you know, there's a lot of material. And, you know, you replace them with two lines, so that has that issue. You have to find space for two lanes where you normally would have one. So, in anticipation of some type of a large offering from the EPA, you know, DEC has said, you know, you need to have a better idea of what you actually have in the ground, so that way when you come to the application process, you have more data to support the application. So, that's what we're doing. The good news is that technology has advanced so much in the last 10 years that the GPS coordinates for all the structures are imported into a program on an iPad that has a cellular connection, and our guys physically are going and they're entering the data. So, you know, we're not using any consultant. We're using, which this is the time of year to do it. You know, there's not a lot of snow. So, basically, what I'll be discussing for the rest of what we're doing is a lot of maintenance and a lot of ancillary work that we have the ability to do in a wintertime situation when there's not a lot of snow. So, the picture on the left shows a manhole with the flow going through it, another main coming in. And on the right is actually a screenshot of the data that's being inputted into that. So it shows that there's a 24-inch down the bottom coming in. There's actually more screens than just this one, but you get the gist of it. You know, it shows where the main is. So this is down on Dock Street outside of the pump station. So it does the GPS points, and they're able to touch on either the manhole or the sectional main. And then they put a yardstick down, or not a yardstick, but a tape measure, and they measure the diameter of the pipes, and then they put this data. So they've done quite a bit in the last couple of weeks. The system should, based on the weather forecast, we should be done within the next couple of weeks citywide. And, you know, so it's, you know, it's ready for the next round. You know, also, you know, things we've been working on, obviously, you know, this time of year with the plows going over, we're able to identify manholes that are easily, that are sticking up a little bit because the plows catch them. So they've been doing a lot of catch basin and manhole work. Picture four, actually, I jumped ahead a little bit. This is the hydrodynamic unit that was installed as part of the stormwater separation project on Columbia Street 2 years ago. So you can see it will always have standing water in it, stormwater, but it's basically one big screen. So these are examples of all the floatables that have been captured that are no longer going to go through into the sanitary system or potentially through an outfall. They're stuck in here, and then we just bring the sweeper along and just suck the stuff off the top. More manhole and catch basin reconstruction. As you can see, a lot of times what's in there is actually masonry, so it's not precast, so it's a matter of, with the catch basin, they went down about two courses, put new block in, put the brick on top, level it off, put the riser. We reuse the risers, obviously, because they're extremely expensive. They're probably about, you know, a couple hundred dollars each. And put it back in the other cold patch around it, and we'll do a final blacktop around it in the during the summer. We do the patchwork. So the RFPs for last year, we were awarded, in 2018 actually, we were awarded WQIP water quality improvement grants to upgrade two of the pump stations, one on Power Avenue and one on Mill Street. So the design work was done last year. Design work was not part of the actual award, so it wasn't reimbursable. So that was paid for out of the 2019 budget. But the plans are all set. We do have the bid on the streets. You know, it's the I have to meet with Heather tomorrow. Part of it is there's sewer fund balance, but there's also going to be some debt service that's going to be issued for the sewer fund and for the water fund based on various awards that we've been given. This is stuff that was discussed during the budget process, and we're, you know, we're getting the time where we're going to be executing on those documents. The as far as the CBG grant, which was $750,000, That was actually half of a grant. The other half we did not get, but we expect to reapply for that second half in July. And we expect to have a much stronger application because hopefully this WQAP project will be complete or on its way to completion, and we'll also have the other grant in the book, so it'll strengthen the application. Shifting to water, more inside work where possible. This is the time of year. So just doing some safety work around the spill prevention and containment areas. This is on the caustic soda, which is sodium hydroxide. There's also, the water plant's actually 15 years old. It doesn't seem like it's that old. So it is a lot of the processes, they're just getting old. They have to be updated. So in this instance, these are chlorine analyzers. They measure the chlorine residual in the water constantly. And at any point that it goes out of a certain preset tolerance, it triggers an alarm. If it triggers an alarm first, it'll actually shut the plant down second, so that way we don't have out-of-compliance water going into the tank. So anyway, the old chlorine analyzer is on the left, the kind of gray box, and I drew a little box on the new one that's been in place. It's all programmed, and they're probably about, I think they're about $3,500 each, and there were two of them. The equipment's not cheap. It's highly specialized, and as part of running a compliant operation, that's the cost of doing business. We also have had it's odd to have as many water breaks, honestly, as we've been experiencing without having a really deep cold. But there's been so many fluctuations in temperature from get a little bit of frost on the ground and get some rain. That might be the culprit. Obviously, in this instance here, that wasn't the issue. This is pictures 11 and 12 are by the Islamic Center. This is actually their brand new service that was installed by Myers. And the contractor who put the tapping, the silver thing is the tapping sleeve, which has a valve to the right of it. That's the orange thing you can see a little bit of. For whatever reason, the seal failed on that sleeve. No one's ever seen that happen before. But so we came in the middle of the night. We were able to actually cut that section of pipe out. So Myers has to come back and redo all of that and install a new section of main because the tapping sleeve failed. They have to put a new one in and do some other work. So there's a mound of stone, and that's just because they have to coordinate to come back and reopen the excavation. It's not done. we have, in response, last year we converted one of our trucks used to carry the equipment with it, and it wasn't really suitable, so we did get a trailer so that way we could load everything. So this was shown as the trailer that was at one of the water breaks. It has everything from generators, the tools, the sleeves. It's a comprehensive, pulls up to the site, everything they need is right there. Outside of something totally odd and out of the ordinary, but all the tools are there, so they can get in and get the work done and get out quickly. Picture 13 is actually, we had a valve that failed in the intersection of 3rd and Columbia, and the valve that was it's hard to read the date, but it's 1878, so when we talk about, aging infrastructure, we've got stuff that's, being used every single day that is significantly, significantly old. the fire department gave us a request for, if you ever seen a fire hydrant, there's two little ones on the sides and there's a big one in the middle. The big one is the steamer fitting. The water department doesn't use the large one. That's for the fire companies to actually attach the pumper trucks to. Apparently there's a quick connect that's available now that they're switching to. So they asked us in the future to, we do hydrants, to have that quick connect, which is no big deal for us. It's just a different model. So this is what we'll be using in the new water projects going forward, this the source, after source, I don't know what it's pronounced. One of the other grants that we were awarded last year was the WIA, the Water Infrastructure, and that was to complete like a 5-year project to bring 12-inch water service from the center grid of the city to the boulevards. This is the last section, it's the 500 block of Washington Street, and it's just too involved for our guys to do. So we did seek an application, we were awarded it. It's about a $500,000 grant. We also have the $500,000 lead line service replacement grant from the Department of Health, and we'll get to that next. So anyway, as part of this project, you know, for the design phase, we have to have surveys come and measure where all of the utilities are. So this is just an example. The green mark is where our sewer main is. The yellow line is a gas main. The blue line off to the top is the water main. And you can see the lateral going to the hydrant. We also have to mark out the lateral services to the house, as those typically are not included in the scope of the project, but because we have that lead line service replacement grant, we'll be incorporating that into the project. So it's a little bit more extensive than we typically do. But so, like I said, the survey's underway. Once that's complete, then we'll be doing the design work for that and then getting ready to put that out to bid this summer. Now, as I mentioned, the lead service line, you know, this is just something a couple of the larger cities have already been doing these projects, and Newburgh is an example of one of those cities. So this is just some of their brochures that they put on their website. There will be an application process. We'll do about 40 or so as part of the Washington Street project. That'll leave, you know, money for about 50 or so more. You know, the application process, because you have to give details of the facility, your house. Obviously, you have to show that you own the house or that you have the owner's consent. You know, there's, you know, it's a bit of a, there's some legalese to it, but there's also, you know, a questionnaire. Standard questions regarding, you know, are you a city official or are you related to a city official, or things of that nature, you know, things that to be, you can, you know, take into consideration. So that's just a sample. There'll be an actual insert going out in the water bills next month with more details about the application process. It was also discussed during the budget process, is, you know, there's we do have all of these grants. A lot of them have local matches, so there's money needed for that. Obviously, the cost of doing business has gone up over the last couple of years. I've been superintendent for 11 years now. We haven't had a rate increase in those 11 years, but we will be raising water sewer rates this coming up month in the March bills by $5 per quarter. And, you know, so it will go from $105 a quarter to $110 per quarter. But I believe when I last discussed it with Heather, it was going to be $4 for water and $1 for sewer. You know, the sewer department is fortunate enough to have the revenue from the septic receiving. And there's more payroll, there's more benefits at the water department because they're actually doing the systems transmission distribution in addition to treatment and operations. So just before the hysteria starts over $20 a year more, I do want to remind everybody that, you know, every drop of water that goes into the system, it starts out in the country in Taconic and Ancrum, and it makes its way into these 110-year-old transmission mains that we do have to maintain. We replace sleeves on them. You know, the sleeves are a couple thousand dollars each when they get replaced. You know, there's other, you know, there's a reservoir with a dam. That's, you know, we have maintenance that we do on that. You know, it has to go through a $10 million water plant and storage tank. We have debt service on that. There's 20 miles of distribution main, you know, that has to be maintained. It is a costly operation. But if you break down the $40 a day or a year into daily, you're talking about $1.22 for basically the water and sewer. The good news is that the amount of water we put in the system does decrease every year. It has steadily over the last 10 years. Obviously, the amount of construction that's going on, fixtures and stuff are being replaced. And mains that we're replacing, that we're leaking. So do a lot of planning for it. Just some other punch. The trail markers are complete for the Empire State Trail. They did send us our reimbursement check. We sent the guys over the hill, so the Promenade Hill Sumac Forest has been leveled already, so that's ready for the season. You know, just some other seasonal stuff. We had switched blades out in one of the plows, and it just shows you, this is just one season, or partial season, and you can see that there's how much steel actually gets worn down when you plow the streets. The new one obviously is on the right, the old one's on the left. 20 is right outside here on 5th Street. A car ran the wrong way in the middle of the night, drove over one of the street lights, and demolished it. So we do have the new one in place. We're just waiting for grid to show up with a new head and to wire it. You know, I just remind you that this is about $3,000. We do have a couple in inventory because they do get hit by cars. But, you know, things that we have to purchase are expensive. Unlike park benches, which are the old ones, we just keep repairing them every year. These are actually new boards. On these, some of them are split. So, new boards, and then just, you know, maintenance around the garage. These are old paint that's too gooey to work in the sprayers for the street. Some of it's like 5 and 6 years old, so we're just using it to, you know, paint various things in the garage. We did retrofit one of the trucks at the water department, but we purchased the trailer for the water breaks, and so we had it turned into it's called a vac truck, but it's a flatbed body with some sides and with a liftgate on it. If you were on the police committee, the chief already talked about the shelves that we built for them for their file storage over one of their facilities, and then they, you know, our guys and their guys went and loaded up the boxes, and we were able to back the truck up inside, and it all stopped. And here's a little bit of shared services. The chief is there. He's not carrying the box, but I don't want to bring up. I didn't realize that it was him at first. So that's another little shared service tidbit is. The school district gives us a call every once in a while, we need a hand, and they have some new dugouts, which aren't actually dugouts anymore, but these are for the softball fields of the high school, and so we showed up with equipment and clevises to help mount the roof. Just briefly about the ADA stuff that, you know, I can only address what's, you know, within DPW scope. Not citywide, you should direct those questions to Michael Chimides. You know, one of the things that was mentioned was the garbage bag machine, which, you know, we refute. I mean, 48 inches is the tolerance, and all of the controls and the, you know, it accepts cash and coins below 4 feet. I don't know if it's because it's a credit card is higher or not. I mean, it does accept Apple Pay, so, you know, we hope that Apple Pay would be able to reach the signal, but in either event, it does accept U.S. currency within 48 inches, so we do plan to challenge that. This is kind of upside down, but this was the one of the stalls out of, I think it's the ladies' room, and the toilet dispenser, paper dispenser was actually below the railing before, so there was only like a 2-inch clearance between the railing and the top of the dispenser, and there's supposed to be a foot clearance or something like that. It wasn't enough room to put it on the bottom, so we've moved it up top. So we believe that should address that. If not, I'm sure our friends at Justice would be happy to tell us. One of the other issues they brought up at the waterfront park was that the picnic tables weren't accessible, so we did order accessible picnic tables, and we just have to pour a concrete pad along one of the sidewalks. So that way we can put the table there, and that way the wheelchair can easily maneuver around the handicap section of the picnic tables. And just, you know, some general the DOT stuff. Ferry Street Bridge. You know, back in 2017, the railroad said they were going to be doing a coordinated review on behalf of both railroads, and then in 2019, CSX said, no, we want to review the project ourselves. So, you know, we thought we were moving pretty well with the progress, and then that that slowed it up a little bit. So we did get the agreements, the executed agreements I received last week. We did give them the escrow amount that was in last month's capital bills. So CSX, their consultant Bergman, is actually conducting the review. And our engineers, they've had some positive discussions with them already. So one of the final, in the last round of comments from DOT, you know, there were some issues regarding one of the curb ramps, which is on the north side of the bridge, the northwest side, which is near what is, I believe, Franklin Park or whatever. It's actually part of the Beaumont, but it's actually a state park. Obviously, we can't put something on property that we don't own. Normally, we would just do some kind of a right-of-way acquisition or potentially an eminent domain. Obviously, you can't do that with the state. The fact that it's classified as a park makes it another whole thing. So we're just going to redesign how that sidewalk goes around so that we stay within the highway boundary and don't intrude on the park property. The bike path, which was it's the only remaining portion of the Empire State Trail that's still city controlled, and that's essentially the dugway. That grant was also not only to do improvements on the dugway, but also to do about 500 feet of sidewalk on Harry Howard. The Harry Howard portion doesn't need to take place anymore because the Empire State Trail has taken that for themselves, and they have awarded the contract yesterday to Colarusso to relocate the water, to install some new drainage and to relocate the fire hydrants. There's 8 of them that have to be moved, which they'll be replacing, which is fine for us. So the TEP portion of it is just that dugway, but because it had money in it for sidewalk and in addition to just repairs of the path, you know, DOT has encouraged us to look at some add-ons, if you will, and so one of the things that we're working through them is to get lighted bollards, because there is no light on that area. It's kind of a secluded area. There's no overhead lights, so get something to help serve as a nighttime trail marker, as well as, you know, a little thing that lights the area. And then just, you know, more seasonal stuff, cemetery work, you know, clearing brush, trimming trees, pine needles. I had no idea that many pine needles could actually fall, but that's what it is. So that's it for me. Okay.
So, just to bring everyone up to speed, in terms of some sidewalk legislation we're working on, Andy Howard had crafted. Now we have to get Jeff Baker familiar with it, and also refamiliarize the council and the public. It's essentially, I think there are two bills that were drafted. One would address current sidewalk issues and change the arrangement in terms of city monitoring of the conditions of the sidewalk and how sanctions would be levied and et cetera in terms of conducting work in lieu of work being done by the homeowner, and then creating a reimbursement through, I guess not through a tax, I mean, I guess we had the sanctions on, correct, if they were not repairing that.
I mean, that's where, I mean, like I said, I provided you guys with a litany of information and suggestions several times, but just to bring it to the speed, the current code allows for the city to enforce sidewalks today. You know, it's in the charter. It says the Commissioner of Public Works can, you know, go up to somebody's sidewalk and say it's defective, give them a 30-day OTR, and they've got to do it. And if they don't do it, you know, so you can contract it out and put it on their taxes. You know, that's existed in the charter since they did it in the 70s.
Right. How often has that happened?
Never, in my understanding.
So there's never been any action on it? Because no. What would... Because I guess it requires what type of...
Well, you've got to go... you've got to go... One of the issues that I've raised several times is there's no real standards. There's a standard for a sidewalk that is a standard concrete sidewalk, 4,000 PSI. So if you're going to do, and this is probably the third administration I brought this up, if you're going to go and cite people for having deficient sidewalks, they're non-compliant if they're pavers, if they're slate, if they're brick. They're also out of compliance with the code. The other issue is, and this is something that if you ever talk to Craig Hague, you'll find is, you know, Craig Hague gives OTRs all the time, and they go up to the courts, and the judges throw them out. You know, there's a whole kind of other thing going on, and I'm not saying that that's a reason one way or the other not to do something, but, you know, I think that at some point there's nothing codified in the that states what's acceptable and what's not. Is a quarter inch separation between two panels acceptable, or is a half inch? Because right now, you know, it's purely subjective, and they go out and they issue tickets for sidewalks that are shoveled, and you would think that that wouldn't be subjective, but it turns out when they go in front of the judge that the judge does take a subjective look at it. So, you know, I think that, you know, there's a lot of the mechanics that have to be done behind the scene that I think you really need to address the materials and makeup of sidewalks.
Right. I mean, I think in the second legislation, which was based on creating a sidewalk district for the city, the entire city modeled off of this program in Ithaca would create, we'd have to define a set of standards per the city streets where you have, if it's bluestone versus concrete, if on one street the preponderance of sidewalk construction is historic and related to...
Right, you wouldn't want slate sidewalks in a commercial district.
Exactly.
You know, it just doesn't...
So, the special district law that the council was looking at last term would create this wider special district and create two types of fees, one residential and one commercial. That would be special fees that could be collected, and then we could set up a schedule for repair, days repair, that I guess would be managed through DPW, but then bid it out regularly to create...
Let's be honest. We went one time, there was an issue with a tree that was dead, and it was within the public right-of-way, and there was one guy, one owner, one tree, and we sent him a 30-day notice, and he was 45 days elapsed. We had a contractor come in and take the tree down. We put it on his taxes. That one person has called religiously four times a year since we did that 4 years ago or something like that. And it was a lot of work because you have to go out, you have to document, you have to, you know. So if, you know, just if you're doing, to do it once, you know, it was probably a couple of hours worth of work, easily.
Right.
So you're talking, you know, 2,000 parcels in the city with 13 miles of sidewalk. You're not talking about the Public Works Department. You're talking about a sidewalk bureau, just like the parking ticket bureau that goes around. And
right. Well, I guess the...
Because you're talking wholesale.
Sure. I mean, it's an argument about... there's a scale of a problem. Like if you look at the sidewalks on the north side of the city, inconsistencies versus the general repair on Warren Street. And I guess that my question is about the current system of repair lies heavily on the homeowner, although we have civil sanctions that say, you know, confusing in terms of either standards like you brought up, but also in terms of just getting someone to do the work. It's expensive, you know, that like you're to contract out to do sidewalk repair, it costs tens of thousands of dollars. And I guess the point of the legislation that we were looking at last term was to create a more equitable model that could share that cost and with a phased type of construction where it would, bureau or not, some department or someone, could be outside consultant, would have to then create a phased system of how to approach the general maintenance of sidewalks, and also I guess through that arrangement there would be some sort of change in the liability structure between the homeowner and the city in terms of that upkeep.
I don't know about that, because the city's replaced these sidewalks on Warren Street not once but twice in the last 4 years. They did it in the 70s when they had those pavers, those orange ones if anybody remembers them, and they turned out to be a nightmare. And in the 90s, they were popping up all over the place, and there was like 1,000 trip hazards. So in the late 90s, the city went and got a second grant and ripped up all of those pavers and put the paved sidewalks in that you had now. So, you know, what you have from basically park down is mostly 20-year-old sidewalks. And if you look at any of the inconsistencies or issues, they're almost exclusively where tree roots are pushing the trees up. So other than that, they're in relatively good repair. Good shape.
Well, what if, and then the complete streets and the DRI issue too, I mean, that's going to set up a whole new type of construction and streetscape look.
Well, that's true. I mean, my understanding is that everybody was taking this wait-and-see approach for, because the whole idea of getting that complete streets is you're bringing in a firm that this is all they do.
Right.
I mean, these guys are jacked. They're not Joe Shit the rag picker that just picks up a shovel and, you know, has a little bucket. I mean, they're... So my understanding was that the idea was to see what it is they were able to hash out through an actually massive, you know, formulated public participation process to see what people even like, what people think is acceptable, what people, and also to come up with associated costs so that way people understand how much these ideas.
Right, I think, and I think that the general sense, I think, on the council is that these things should operate or coincide, one should follow the other. But in preparation for that, I think we want to figure out if there's a way to have a general formula through legislation to have, once that framework comes in, to then get a jump on it and have a consistent maintenance framework for sidewalks so that when certain sections do fall in disrepair, that there's a way to keep up with it without overburdening the cost or city or the homeowner.
Well, I mean, the homeowner's going to pay for it either way, right?
Yeah.
Maybe they're creating a tax.
Well,
a fee or whatever. But I believe I read it. I just thought it was kind of odd that, you know, there was like this double fee for Warren Street and their sidewalks are in pretty good shape.
Well, I think the question is the idea of I don't know what the line could be, if it's a hardship, or rather carve out for if you've done work to repair your sidewalk within a period of time and it's up to whatever, how we define those standards, then you would get a pass, an amortized pass versus but at the same time, again, if you were hit with if someone came up to you and said your sidewalk is in bad shape or it is, and suddenly you're faced with a $15,000 bill, it's hard to pay. I mean, you know, there's an argument saying that.
Listen, I hear you. I mean, I don't know if I'm playing devil's advocate or what, but, I mean, you own your house, I bought my house, I had to put a $15,000 roof on it. I didn't want to. $10,000 worth of masonry in the chimneys.
I think a sidewalk has a unique relationship where you give a public easement, you know, for use, and then it's on you for you to repair. And if you're either a civic-minded person, you keep up with it, or not, or if you're on a fixed income and you can't afford the cost of upkeep, so it's a problem. Or if you're a renter living in a building where a landlord doesn't bother to care about repair of the property. So I think, you know, that's what we want to address with this. And, you know, there is a desire to push something forward, but certainly following along with, it's good that the Complete Streets initiative is there to give us some sort of guidance. Is there any?
Well, you guys just authorized the contract
two days
ago.
Okay, good.
I didn't know. Last week
or
whatever it was. Well, it was at the full council, so.
Right. But, I mean, I wasn't in the DRI.
So now they're, whatever, I'm assuming the mayor signed it, and so obviously they're, you know, they weren't just sitting around twiddling their thumbs waiting for a contract, but they've been, I mean, they clearly, you know, understand what the scope is, and they've been vetted, so they're ready to proceed.
Mm-hmm.
I would imagine we'd get some kind of schedule from them over the next month or so.
That's great. And for anyone who's not familiar with the fee schedule, the unique thing about doing a sidewalk bill with fees like this is it does address the role of non-for-profit and other entities that currently don't pay taxes to the city, and it's a way of addressing engaging those entities and being able to pay for or contribute to the civic amenities right now where they're exempt from doing that. So that's part of the gist of the bill. Certainly a lot of moving pieces here. But that is, if that's that. Shirshi, you had a question for Raul about crosswalk?
Yeah, about that. I told Lal last time also him about the crosswalk in Rossman and Prospect. The painting crosswalk.
Yeah, I mean, I've discussed to this committee before. I mean, there's, you know, the materials budget's been reduced.
We got a grant for the crosswalk also.
Yeah, $4,000.
And while I was asking about the expense, and you was telling
me.
But
also the greater issue is, you know, it's.
He was telling me $5,000 for painting crosswalk.
Right, but this is how it's been.
I don't think so. It's need a $5,000.
Right. Here's the issue. Is that these discussions, these crosswalks, just seem to kind of come out of nowhere. It's, you know, like ordering a pizza or some kind of commodity. And I discussed this with the police. I thought he brought it up in the police committee. I know I presented it to this committee that, you know, there should be some type of a process, an evaluation where, you know, you take into consideration the request. Is the request, does it have support, you know, there. Because you get people who want stop signs, and you get people who want, you know, flashing this, and they want something that. And, you know, at this point, there's no discourse with the neighbors. I mean, you're going to end up taking parking spaces. Do people support that? The other municipalities that have these processes, they have to get petitions. They have to get so much support from the neighborhood to show that they want it. And the other issue is that
there is a needy petition to put for that.
And this is the biggest issue. Is that, yeah, the cost of the sidewalk in 2020 is, you know, say that if one crosswalk is $1,000 or $1,500 with the stop bar and everything else. That's fine. The problem is that the crosswalk wears away. And so next year, you need that same money again. And the year after that, you need that same money again. And so this is what we learned.
But it is also a safety issue also, right? That's the busiest street and the walking people in there.
Well, there's I live there. I know exactly about it. You don't tell me about my house. I know what it's like, you know. But I'm just trying to explain to you that, you know, this is not just a one intersection discussion. There's 100 intersections in the city,
mm-hmm.
and there's people who have requested.
Whenever it's needed, some places it's needy.
Well, that's fine. But the issue is that you have to pay for the stuff to go down, not just the one time. You have to pay for it to get, because it has to get repainted every year.
You're using decals, Rob, correct?
Well, how? What is the?
You're not using paint. Let's be accurate, please.
Well, hold on a second. What is the? Just out of curiosity, how do you? Since it is every year, every other year. What is your? How do you schedule the repair? Is it, do you do it by complaint or do you do it?
No. There's. You know, there's dozens of crosswalks throughout the city. So it takes about $15,000 a year of thermoplastic product just to maintain what we have in the system. Nothing new. That's just the ones that have already been put in citywide. And it takes months to go through and for us to cut in the pieces and melt it. Into it, you have to have weather and the right condition. It's got to be during the summertime and the road's hot. And the, you know, so there's other constraints, but it's $15,000 just the materials just to keep what we have. So if you want to keep adding crosswalks, I don't have an objection with adding crosswalks, but you got to earmark an account that you're going to continually fund year after year after year after year to pay for the materials to continually keep them upgraded. Otherwise, they fall into disrepair, and then people are like, well, you know, what the hell is that going on? You know, this one looks like that.
So within your department, you budget something similar to?
Well, there's a $150,000 material supply account that these come out of. So you're talking 10% of that budget is, you know, but you're also paying for stone and concrete and blacktop for streets and fuel for vehicles. I mean, it sounds like a big number, but you know, we plow through it pretty quickly, especially in the summertime when, you know, there's a lot of street activity going on.
So I guess the further question is then, you prioritize the painting and upkeep of those based upon just a something that's essentially an arbitrary decision, or do you go with it, if it's a about complaints or something that DOT says to you guys?
These are all we're doing now is we're just maintaining. We haven't, you know, there's
so
been any
there's been a new one in a couple of years. So just a regular maintenance.
It's basically. Just and that's just like I said, it's $15,000 just to maintain. You know, because
well, that grant really came from the that department, like for the road safety issues, and I believe this is a safety issue that a busy street also, and some walking people cross the street a lot of times. So I that's why I'm asking. Since last
two guys, I know they're my neighbors.
It's not a two guys. You always mentioning two guys. Sometimes you have to walk yourself too.
I walk across the street, so I live there.
So. Like, you know, it's not only two guys, not only two people are live in that street side. More people live in there.
Yeah, but has anybody else asked for it?
Yes.
And by the way, I don't know if you know, I told these guys the first thing they should do is not wear black clothing in the middle of the night. I mean, they're just...
But... To his point, I mean...
And sometimes Columbia Memorial Hospital's employee park on that side of the street and they walk and go to the work. Mm-hmm. Employees told me, they're my customer, they come to the store.
So, yeah, is it going to be...
Yeah, and I've seen them all, they all cut through the parking lot, they cut through the person's driveway.
They park in there and
right,
go
right.
to the hospital.
Yeah, but they would, if
not
the crosswalk was there, they would use a crosswalk, because they cross
but
up.
But that's an argument for not doing it. Is there, will there be
well, my point, well, there's an argument, is, are people going to use the crosswalk or not?
Well, I mean,
But here's the thing, and it's just a generic discussion. I really don't want to be caught up in this one crosswalk.
Sure.
Is that if you're serious about crosswalks, you have to be serious about paying for the material to go down.
Right.
It's just that simple. I don't know if I.
That's why we got that grant.
You got a grant, which is a one-time grant, which is
yes.
great. But what happens when that same crosswalk has to be repaired next year?
Let's worry about that when it comes to that.
We are increasing people's tax. We are increasing meters. We are getting revenue. What is giving us not option to do those things?
Look, you're the one who says yes or no to the budget. So all you have to do is say yes. I want more money in the budget to cover the expenses.
So we can prioritize
that. That's it.
We don't have enough money to cover that.
No, we've been reducing it.
Are you saying there's no more money for crosswalks?
Well, I'm curious though, do we reduce it or does your department reduce it? That's what I'm curious
about. I put a request in for $150,000. I show it as a 5-year average, that's what it costs, $150,000. In 2019 or 2018, it was reduced to $130,000. Or 2019 was $130,000, which I ended up having money from other accounts that was transferred to cover to bring it back up to $150,000. 2020, it's $140,000. The reality is that I don't make these numbers up, and material costs go up every year.
Sure.
So this is an account that should be going up every year, and instead it goes down.
But
so.
The decision to decrease that money was done
in the budget process
with the mayor and the
right,
the common council president
and the treasurer. Sure.
Okay.
But I mean, it's you guys have input. You're the ones who ultimately vote for it, so
sure.
You have to.
But are you saying you're agnostic on the idea, or I mean?
You make crosswalks everywhere you want. I don't care. You can have 1,000 crosswalks. But you got to be able to pay for them.
Well, fine. Well, back to the sidewalks, this is part of the reason why we want to move toward a mechanism like this, so we have a way to pay for them, so we're not in a position where there's inconsistent upkeep. And certainly, I think we need to be able to maintain our crosswalk painting just beyond bare maintenance, and something that we should address in the budget process.
Right.
It doesn't seem to me personally, and this could be a.
When you make your budget, did you add that?
Want.
Like, you're going to do that crosswalk? Did you add that?
No, the budget was reduced.
Did you add that?
No, I didn't.
Well, then, I was lacking awareness of it. It just seems that there's not enough transparency there in terms of what is needed. How things can be allocated in that process and wherever that.
I mean, it used to be
lies.
Me and the BEA up in the mayor's conference room. That's
right.
How it was for.
And now it's
more. Even when you
yeah,
are making a budget, you even you are. I mean, it was not even on your head.
I make a comment quickly about this? I did a calculation of the intersection at 2nd and 3rd, the crosswalks. There's four crosswalks at the intersection. And I foiled for the information for those decals that are used there. It cost $860 for those four crosswalks. $860 for four crosswalks. It's not $1,500, Rob.
Would you put the stop bar in there, too?
There are no stop bars there.
Alderman Green, as well.
I was just sitting here listening, and I'm curious, particularly about what you mentioned with the crosswalks. I remember when I used to sit on DPW, it was always in the budget, in DPW, four crosswalks every year. And I remember specifically people having real concerns and complaints about the crosswalks and their fears of crossing and so forth. And if I remember correctly, it was always told to the committee and council, the crosswalks get repaired during the summertime, so that way it can be all done and ready for school. And we've been saying that that hasn't even been happening. So we're just wondering what is really going on, and if there is money that was contributed, $4,000, yes, it may not be enough. But my question is, what was deducted? And no, I can't remember. Excuse me, I had a seizure yesterday and I was in the hospital. But what was deducted out of the budget from the BEA's choice? Because I'm sure, I'm hoping crosswalks wasn't one of them, because that is a safety, public safety issue. So what was cut out of the budget that crosswalks was put on the pause?
There was $20,000 reduced from the material account.
Overall.
The crosswalks went?
I mean, but so you're saying
well,
that's
we
your
make ups elsewhere too, but that's just it.
Yeah, the mention specifically the materials for crosswalks.
What's that?
When 20,000 deduct from the materials.
So to clarify, but that's your overall budget, and of that, I mean, then
that's
your
aggregate, right? And
then
we know that we have a certain amount of money that's going to go just for like fuel and to just.
I mean, he was not even mentioning that. There is need a crosswalk, and it's been going on from last council to this council.
I guess in the budget process, and how the, I guess this is a question of priorities, right? What you said here, and how.
And when I was telling him last time, he was telling about where is the money, and we get a grant, and he was telling me crosswalk painting needs $5,000.
Yep, I heard it too. $5,000 for one crosswalk, you said, Rob.
Okay, has that one been done?
This is what the...
Has that one been done?
No.
The grant was $1,500 in last year and $2,500 in this year. It was $4,000 total. So the $2,500 for this year hasn't been... The product hasn't been purchased yet because you can't put it down in the wintertime.
So to Shirsh's point then... That there is this money allocated to do it.
There's $4,000 to go for crosswalk thermoplastic paint. So you can, if you want to put out a new one, that's fine, but there's nothing to go on the other one.
Yeah, I'm asking, please put the new one in.
But you really need to have a discussion about where it's going to go. Because there's no sight lines. I mean, if you put a crosswalk in the middle of that street and people just step out and put out traffic, you know. I mean, my point is that there needs to be more of a comprehensive discussion than just I want a crosswalk or I think it's safer a crosswalk, because you got people coming down Worth Avenue shortcutting over that road, and you know, I mean, I try and pull out of my driveway every day, and it's literally like playing the game of Frogger. I mean, you got to be careful.
So, and then you do have.
So you got to worry about sight lines. I mean, there's other things to consider.
So what is?
That should be considered.
So you do have as a resident, you do have a stake in this, then what do you think we should do, and how should we commission your department to handle this problem?
Well, I think that there should be, anytime there's a discussion of any kind of traffic control device or crosswalk, those requests should go to a body of people. That should involve a DPW person. It should involve a police or something like that. They should have some kind of statistics, some traffic. There should be something to say, where are we, what's happening, what are we finding? There should be a public discussion component. There shouldn't be two people asking for a crosswalk, you know, in a neighborhood where the other neighbors may not think it's warranted or may want something else. entirely different. And my point is that to just come to this meeting and say I want two crosswalks with extra cheese and pepperoni is a little bit silly.
Well, I don't
there should be a formal review process that involves a multidisciplinary.
Well, you're mentioning two people since the last council too. That meaning to me seems like you don't like those two people or you...
No, he's fine. I like him just fine.
No, you are always mentioning that. That's meaning to me.
Because
like
he emails me too. I mean,
he emails you because they need it. Also, I told you, those nurses, PCAs, the Columbia Memorial starts parking on your street and they walk to the hospital.
Well,
and there is no good sidewalk in the other side too.
Well, that's a wider issue. I mean,
the question is, who is going to create this process that Rob talks about?
Well, this is what we're trying to
Who's going to create it? I want to say one quick thing. I brought it up at
Well, there's another person who wants to ask a question too. All of you agree to follow it.
I just remember, just caught a rubber memory. I remember even back when I was on, the materials had changed in DPW, specifically with crosswalks. And I remember you talking about it and stating how the new paint or material that is used would last longer than what you guys would use in the past. So is that still being used? Because if
Correct.
The subject matter is, excuse me, if the subject matter is crosswalks and a concern from last term, are those materials ordered or are we waiting for them? Have they been used?
They had the ones for this year haven't been ordered yet because waiting to see where we are, how big the project's going to be. You can't put them down in the cold anyway. So if I ordered them on January 1st, they'd just be sitting in the garage. You can't do anything until May at the earliest until it gets warm. To answer your original question about a different product, that is absolutely true. And the difference is when I say does it last longer is that if you recall, the paint that used to go down, that was out of a spray paint gun, would be put down in June or July, and come February, there wasn't a single crosswalk visible in the city. Because between the snow plows and just the wear from traffic, they were totally gone. That is not the case anymore. You can go out there right now and you can find, maybe not pristine crosswalks, but you certainly can identify crosswalks citywide. And that is solely because this product is a superior product that isn't gone, that doesn't wear away. That said, it's expensive.
Right. So I guess to my point, I mean, if we're going to prioritize pedestrian safety in the city, which I think we'd all agree is a good...
Sure, I do too.
It's a great outcome. If you took an undertaking and said, right now we're going to paint every crosswalk in the city of Hudson and bring them up to speed with this new material and make everything very safe for pedestrians, what would that cost? Just, you don't have to have a hard number, obviously, we're looking at the ballpark with it.
Yeah, whenever we ordered a pallet of material, and it's $15,000 for a pallet. You're talking, there's crosswalks around the schools, they're all over the city, they're not just,
How many crosswalks are in the city of Hudson?
Yeah.
I don't have an exact count, there's hundreds of them. Obviously, some of them run at an angle, so they're longer when they run at an angle. Like the one by the Opera House, Warren Street's 40 feet wide, but it runs on an angle, so it's probably 50 feet wide or something like that. So, you tend to, you can shell through product, and you put those hashes in there, and you can start shelling through product pretty quickly.
So, I guess that's, in terms of your overall budget, I mean, these are great, these presentations are in deep detail. Obviously, the people who work for DPW are great, hard work. It seems if every year we're fighting for X amount of money in the budget to do maintenance, which you have to shift around between your various demands, and it seems that we have this continual argument about consistent upgrade of crosswalks, then I think it needs to be an issue that we prioritize to get it right once and then keep on top of it. And if you're resource-starved, we'll find out a way to...
Right. But it doesn't take anything to send an email and say, hey, Mayor, can you... the chief of police or one of your lieutenants, Rob Perry, an alderman or something like that, can you guys sit down and just take a look from a multidisciplinary response of what it is that, here's the request. Do you think it and if you think it's warrants and you think it's okay, how do you want to do it? Because, no two crosswalks in the city of the same. I mean, none of them, let's just be clear. you know, without, you know, creating a liability issue. I mean, none of our crosswalks meet any of the standards.
Sure.
You know, I mean, technically, for sightline, and you're driving down the road, and somebody's standing on the side of the side, they're supposed to be visible on the sidewalk. You know, these things are plunked away. There's parking spots. All you theoretically would have to take probably two parking spaces on either side.
Well, that's I mean, for me, but if we all know this, then how come we're not doing anything about it? And I'm not.
Well, because nobody wants to get rid of parking spaces.
Can I sum up the problem as I see it? I brought the issue up at a police meeting last year. And I asked Chief, I said, what's the process for getting a crosswalk or some sort of traffic control device? He said, well, Rob Perry and I, we want to have more of an inclusive process. I said, okay, well, when's that going to happen? He said, well, it's in Rob Perry's hands. Now tonight, Rob Perry is basically saying he's not going to make up his mind, and he doesn't know what the process is. So it's like you bounce it back and forth, and the ball hasn't gone anywhere. In 6 months, we still don't know how to get one crosswalk into the new intersection, which a guy Shears has asked for like 8 months now. And we're still talking about it. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, go on.
Thank you. It's like, you know, make up their mind. Either create a committee for crosswalks or make Rob Perry make up his mind.
Well, try to figure it out.
Well, we achieved some success in previous administrations when the Commissioner of Public Works and the Police Commissioner would go out on a regular basis and survey the different conditions in crosswalks and parking locations in yellow paint, and it was successful. And we would make a recommendation to Rob together, and Rob would take action on it, and that seemed to be a pretty decent process. I would suggest that let's try that. And I'd be happy to meet with the police commissioner and the mayor and the common council president, and John yourself, to talk about maybe that process, re-invoking that process, because there was some success in that from my perspective.
Okay, well, we could carry this over to next month's meeting, but I would like to make a motion to adjourn this one.
Awesome. You hear public comment? General public comment?
We've had some public comment for this one.
Really?
Yeah.
That was public comment, but just about crosswalks, there's all sorts of other stuff.
I know, but we gotta.
What about LED lights? What about security?